be there in just a moment. The book of Daniel was written for a whole bunch of important reasons. I'm going to cover those in my class that I'll teach here in a little over an hour or so. But one of the things that I'm not going to get a chance to talk about during that class are some of the very important historic events, some stories that Daniel records for us that I think were meant to help us live our lives now. There were four young men that were highlighted at the beginning of Daniel. Their names were Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Daniel himself. And these four young men came over from Israel when the Babylonians took them captive and brought them into the land of Babylon. There are two famous stories about those four young men, although they're not young in every one of the stories. The two stories are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego with the fiery furnace in chapter 3, and Daniel in the lion's den in chapter 6. And what I'd like to do in this lesson is compare those two stories. Talk about why two similar stories that kind of bookend that first half of the book of Daniel. But let's consider these young men just first and understand what they were like. Go here in chapter 1 and look at verse 4. Here is a description of the kind of young men they were looking for in Babylon. It says, youths in whom there was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. Notice there's a couple of physical characteristics that are described about the young men they were looking for. Things like there was no defect in them. Maybe they ran them on a treadmill with like an EKG test. I don't know what that means exactly, but they didn't see any limp or blemish. They were physically fit. They were intellectually capable. You see there it says that they had intelligence and understanding and discerning knowledge. They also seemed to have like this social gift, that they had the ability to serve in the king's court and could even adapt to the culture of the Babylonians. These are pretty extraordinary young men, wouldn't you agree? In fact, I've known young women that have read this and said, that sounds like a young guy that would be like the whole package. Like, that's the kind of guy I'm looking for. But you know what made these four young men stand out was not just that they were better looking or smarter, but this chapter highlights that they were godly. They had a spiritual mind, and they had really an extraordinary spirit because God was with them. Go to the end of chapter 1, look at what happens a couple of years later when graduation day comes. In chapter 1, verse 18, it says, at the end of those days which the king had specified for presenting them, the commander of the officials presented them before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king talked with them, and out of them all, not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service. As for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were in all his realm. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king. Notice that when the graduation day comes, they go in front of Nebuchadnezzar, and it says that he found them to be 10 times better than anybody else. And I don't believe that this is just that they were naturally smarter and sort of more capable. But again, what's highlighted in chapter 1 is they made decisions that put God first. And because they were dedicated to being men of integrity, and they did whatever they did to the glory of God, they stood out. Maybe that's the first lesson. Christians should do that. In their families, in their neighborhoods, in their workplace, at school. There should be something about what God teaches godly people that they would always do their best and shine as lights in a dark world. Would you agree that we're living in a time where light is desperately needed to be seen? Now, in some ways, when the Babylonians brought these captives into Babylon, they were bringing the best of people. I mean, these were people that were closest with God to anybody on planet Earth, and bringing them into a land of darkness where they could shine. But the two stories that we're going to talk about are really interesting stories, together especially. In the first story, we're going to see these young men not bow down to an idol that everybody else was bowing down to. Sometimes when Christians, what Christians are called on to do to stand out is to not bow to the same things that everybody else bows to. But in the second story, in chapter 6, we have the opposite. We have Daniel refusing to stand up when the law was passed that nobody should kneel before God. So think about those two things. Sometimes we need to stand when everybody else is bowing before something that's not right. And sometimes we need to be willing to still kneel before God when nobody else is willing to kneel to anything but the powers that be in their nation. Let's look at these stories a little closer and we'll make some lessons out of them. Actually, before we do that, did you notice here in chapter 1, in verse 21, it seems like a verse you might read past pretty quick, but it says, Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king. You see that phrase? It's kind of important because Cyrus is a long way in time from chapter 1. And what that actually says is Daniel shined his light through three different kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, and eventually Darius. Three different kings ruled, and Daniel always found his way to the top of that sort of that particular regime or that particular cabinet of men. It's not just three kings, it's two kingdoms. Babylon ruled first, and Babylon's taken over by the Persians, and yet still you see Daniel right up at the top. By the time we get to the story of the lion's den, I've actually seen children's Bible class material where Daniel's a kid in the lion's den. He's not a kid. He's probably at least 83 years old when the lion's den happens. But the first story with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would have been when they were young. So let's think about those stories kind of as bookends of the whole history of Daniel's life in Babylon. Let's go to chapter 3 now and notice a couple of things. At the beginning of Daniel chapter 3, I'm just going to summarize the first few verses of that. Nebuchadnezzar builds this giant statue out in the plains of Dura. It probably was because he had a dream in chapter 2 of a big statue, and Daniel had interpreted that dream and said, hey, king, you're the gold of that statue up at the top. And maybe he was enamored with that, but he builds this giant statue, and he calls everybody together to the plains of Dura, and he says, it doesn't matter where you're from, it doesn't matter what language you speak, I don't care how important you think you are, when I strike up the band, when I play the music, everybody's got to bow to that idol. Now look what verse 7 says. Chapter 3, verse 7 says, therefore, at the time when all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Now, I don't know if you can picture that. Picture a plain with a giant idol and just a multitude of people from every nation, every tribe, every tongue. They worship different gods. They used to have different leaders. And here they all united in a moment, bowing down with their faces to the ground. Do you think that was something to behold? Do you think the king looked at that and thought, look at how powerful I am? Now, the Bible says that everybody bowed. That's kind of how it puts it. But you find out in verse 8 that that's not true. It's hyperbolic. Verse 8 says, for this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you've appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image which I have made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. Stop there if you would. When all those people bowed down in front of the idol, some people did not. 3 men, probably just teenagers or early 20s, they stood there while everybody else bowed. But it wasn't just that. It was that some others didn't have their faces in the dirt. They were looking up and peeking, seeing who wasn't doing what they were supposed to, and found Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, probably these guys were jealous. I mean, these are job-stealing Jews. They're foreigners who shouldn't be having these positions of authority, and they're upset. So they go to the king and they say, "Look, these people are different than us. They don't worship our gods. They don't respect you, and they didn't do what you said." Did you notice that Nebuchadnezzar is angry in verse 13? He was raging and in anger says, "Bring them before me." Now, I don't know what made him have a change of heart. But when these young boys walk in, maybe he recognized them. Maybe he didn't remember them by name. But when he saw them, he does something extraordinary. He gives them a second chance. He doesn't just chop off their heads. He doesn't just throw them into the fire right away. He says, "If you're ready, I'll let you try this again." Now, time out a minute. Have you ever done something in a moment where you thought this is the right thing to do, and you had the courage to do it because maybe nobody was paying attention? But then when everybody noticed and sort of was watching you and put you on the spot, and you had sort of this next chance, and there was a consequence attached to what you were about to do or not do, did it get a little more difficult? What I love about this story is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego don't even let him go through with the music. They say, "You don't need to start up the band. We don't even really have to answer you. King Nebuchadnezzar, no, we won't do this." Now, Nebuchadnezzar was an interesting leader. He had this habit of having to, like, interpret things. Remember all the dreams? He'd be like, "Who can tell me what this means?" He didn't have to do that this time. Like, this was clear. "No, we won't bow." He's so mad in verse 19 that he says, "Crank the oven up 7 times hotter." Now, remember that this whole time, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego can see and feel that fire. They know what's coming if they disobey. He gets his best men to take them to the fire, the most noble warriors. The fire is so hot it kills them. And they throw those young men into the fire. All right, let's go to chapter 6 now, and let's look at the story of Daniel in the lion's den. We'll finish that story in a minute. Daniel chapter 6. Notice verse 1, it says, "It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them 3 commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Now notice this. Out of all of the leaders in the province, the king chose 120 to be these commissioners. Daniel made the cut. Out of the 120, he picked three. Daniel made the cut. Out of the three, it says that he was the best. He was the chief. So much so that the king wanted to put him in charge of all the province. Well, what do you think that's going to do to the rest of the leaders? Again, they're jealous. They want to find something on this politician who's distinguishing himself. You know, it's usually easy to find dirt on a politician, isn't it? But they can't find anything on Daniel, the verses go on to say. But they have this plan. If we're going to get him in some way to be in trouble, it's got to be that he's going to disobey the law of Babylon because he serves his God. But at that time, there wasn't anything that was incompatible with Daniel serving God and what the Babylonians were expecting. So they go to the king and have him create a new law. Here's the law. Hey, king, we think for a period of time you shouldn't let anybody pray or bow to any other ruler, leader, or God except for you, because you're so great. Now, in the back of their minds, they're thinking, there's no way Daniel's going to do that. Daniel's going to bow and pray to his God, and then we'll get him, because if the king signs this, there's no way out of it. Now, attached to that was the punishment or the penalty that if you did this, you'd be thrown to hungry lions. Look at verse 10 of chapter 6. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open towards Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man beside you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? The king replied, "The statement is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked." Then they answered and spoke before the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction that you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day." Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel, and even exerted until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Stop there if you would. Now we find out in verse 10 that Daniel heard about the law. And once he heard about the law, it seems like he just sort of shrugged his shoulders and thought, well, that's not going to faze me. He went back to his house. He went up to his chamber where he had windows that were open. I don't know if those windows couldn't be closed. It may have just been one of those rooms that had open windows and there was no way to change that. Or he left them open on purpose. Either way, he wasn't going to change what he did. And those men came and watched through the windows and saw him and went and reported him to the king. Did you notice the difference between Darius and Nebuchadnezzar? Look again at verse 14. As soon as the king heard this, now back in chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar was furious, but this king is deeply distressed and wants to save Daniel. By the way, you know what makes both stories true? Neither king was able to do anything about what God did. For example, Nebuchadnezzar wanted to kill the boys, and we're going to find out in a minute, you already know the end of this, he didn't. Here, Darius wants to save Daniel, and he couldn't. He tries and tries to find a legal loophole, but he can't. He's got to throw him into the lion's den. Listen, if there was ever a text that teaches this important lesson, I'll just quote this or reference it. In Psalm 146, verse 3, it says, "Do not put your trust in princes, in rulers. We could say, don't put your trust in presidents and politicians. You know why? That psalm goes on to say, because they breathe the breath of men, they're just going to die like everybody else. They don't have as much power as you think. Listen, Christian, the president's not going to save you. Politicians, I don't care how you vote, I don't care how things go, they can't save you. They also can't harm you. If God doesn't want you harmed, you won't be. And if God doesn't want you dead, you won't be. What's the point of these stories? Let me just draw a few lessons out of them, and then we'll finish the stories and talk about the most important thing. A couple of lessons. Number one, in both stories, I think it's significant that you have either a young man and an old man who can see or hear the consequence. They can feel the fire and they can listen to the lions, both times. How much more difficult is it when that's the case? When you know that your right choice about something is going to make you suffer shame, injury, persecution. This is really the point, and I'll get back to that in a minute. But another lesson in this is that's not the only challenge they faced. They didn't use their age as an excuse. Have you ever seen people do that? Some young person, sometimes it's not even the young person, it's like the parents of the young person, say something like this. Well, they're just young after all, they're just sowing their wild oats. You know, you can't really expect them to live a godly life, they're just kids. In the Bible, that's never an excuse. People that love the Lord when they know they love the Lord, whether they're teenagers like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or an old man like Daniel. Have you ever heard somebody talk like that? Hey, I've served God for decades. I've done all kinds of things. It's time for the next generation to step up. I'm retiring from doing this work. It's not just their age. I want you to consider that they were away from home, that they were out of their element, that they were possibly at the beginning anonymous, you know. But either way, they weren't where they were used to. They felt kind of out of place. Do you ever feel like that in the nation you live in the workplace? Again, that's never an excuse to not serve God. They could have said, well, we don't have all the support of everybody else around us. You ever tried to do the thing that everybody else was not doing, or not do the thing that everybody else was doing? Peer pressure is hard. Standing alone is difficult. They didn't use any of those excuses. You know, another thing they didn't say was, well, we've got this really great job, this really great position, and we can't lose that. You ever heard a Christian talk like that? Hey, why aren't you worshiping God on the Lord's Day? Well, I can't worship God because if I do that, I might lose my job. I can't really say what's true or right about morality because if I did that, I might lose my job. Anytime you ever are tempted to think like that, think about these guys. You'll never have a job as good as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And yet that didn't even seem to enter into their thinking. What's the lesson? Long before the New Testament would ever say, we walk by faith and not by sight, these men demonstrated that. They didn't make their decisions based on what was right in front of them, with what they saw with their eyes. They thought of something further on. Listen, the fire of Nebuchadnezzar was nothing compared to the fire of God on the other side. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego could face either the first fire or the second. And they knew that they wanted to please God. Daniel, when he looked at the hungry lions, on the other side of that, according to the Bible, there's the lion of the tribe of Judah that's going to be our judge. It's far better to face hungry lions on earth than it is to not love the Lord and face him. But I don't think that's even the greatest of points in the book of Daniel about these stories. Did you notice in our Bible reading what we read just a minute ago, what Simon read? Go back to chapter 4, look at verse 1. Chapter 4, verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language that live in all the earth, may your peace abound. It has seemed good to me to declare the signs and wonders which the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his works, wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I want to remind you that what Nebuchadnezzar just said there came from the pen and the mouth of a guy who back in chapter 3, verse 15 said, "What God is there that can deliver you from my hands?" You know what these lessons really are? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, by doing what they did not just save themselves. They changed the world. Maybe that's what Christians need to hear these days. As dark as it gets, as hard as it is, to navigate between the extremes of the idols around us. It's hard sometimes to stand up in a work environment or someplace in your family when people are being hateful or racist or whatever and say, "That's not right. Don't say that. We're all the same in God's eyes." It's just as hard to do that as it is on the other extreme when you see the violence and the things that are going on in the world in the name of justice that are just as ungodly. And you speak up and say, "Well, don't you care about?" No, listen, Christians have to do what's right no matter when, no matter what, no matter who's with us. And that's just one application in the list of thousands. Did you know what happened with Daniel was the same? Nebuchadnezzar saw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and became a believer in God. A pagan said these things. And some of the greater words are there at the end of chapter 4 and verses 34 through 35 that we read. But look what happens with Daniel and Darius. Go back to chapter 6. And I'll frame it this way. 120 of Daniel's peers hated his guts. These men that were around him that he worked with wanted to bring him down. He wasn't concerned necessarily about what they would think of him. He just was concerned about what God would think. But once Daniel did what he did, listen to the words of Darius, verse 25. Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who were living in all the land, "May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the domain of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and enduring forever. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. I want to draw your attention to something that was said by Darius. He says about this kingdom that Daniel belongs to, in God's kingdom, that it's a kingdom that is forever, that will never be destroyed. Look, Darius was fully aware that kingdoms come and go. Babylon was gone. Persia was in power, but he had learned enough to know that his kingdom wouldn't be forever. God's people need to learn that no matter what kingdom on earth they're a part of, it's only temporary. This kingdom that we live under, this republic, someday will not be the same, if at all. And the only thing that will matter is that we've decided who's our God, who we will bow to, and not be willing to stand when nobody else is willing to bow, and who what we won't bow to when everybody else is bowing to the images and idols of our time. What about you? What is it that you've done or you're doing to make sure that God gets the glory in your life? I hope you'll remember this story, these stories of faith as you navigate these days ahead, the places that you live. They're inspiring. But God changes hearts by the things that he shows through our faithful lives. We're going to sing a song now that's meant to encourage. And if there's anything we can do for you spiritually, whether you're listening online or whether you're here, please reach out to us. Let us know how we can pray for you or how we can help you. Adam.